Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hello, and welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. I'm Julie Fudge-Smith, and I'm here today, of course, with Colleen Pilar. And we're talking today about house training. One of the banes of all puppy owners, especially in dog owners too, is how do I teach Rover to go outside? So, Colleen, do you have a special trick that you have for teaching dogs to go outside, or is there a particular problem that you seem to encounter more often than not when talking to clients?
I think the magic trick, the magic answer that everyone's waiting for is supervise. It's the key to house training a puppy is watching behavior. You know, setting yourself up for success, being there, being awake, not just being in the same room, but eyes on the dog. And that's not the answer anyone wants.
No, they want some magic cue where the dog is going to sit up and say, excuse me, would you mind letting me out the door now? And that's just not going to happen.
Yeah. So, but with great supervision, I think puppies particularly, you know, a well-raised puppy who was raised in a nice, healthy, clean environment, which makes a big difference.
It does make a huge difference.
Can typically be trained pretty quickly if you are careful about supervising and have really good management practices, because you'll start to learn your signs and you can get outside and the dog can be reinforced for going outside. And your dog very quickly will develop not only a habit, but a preference for that area. This is my potty area. And that's a good thing. That's a really good thing.
That's an excellent thing to have a particular spot where your dog goes to the bathroom. And I think that what I have found is you're right. Supervision is certainly the most important. But behind supervision, one of the things that I find is a common mistake among owners is that when the dog needs to go out, they supervise. They take the dog outside, but they don't take it out on leash. They take it out and just let the dog wander around the yard. And maybe the dog goes, maybe he doesn't. But one of the things is I find that slows down house training because you're not giving the dog a clear signal of what it is that you want him to do.
Right.
So what I usually recommend is you snap the leash on, you go out to that very particular spot where you want him to go, and then you do your very best imitation of a telephone pole.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as he goes, well, boom, that's when the party starts. That's when the leash can come off and you can play in the yard. That's when you get the treats. So the dog understands very clearly that all good things happen after I do my duty to God and country, so to speak.
Yeah, I always like for puppies to realize that they are in control of a very valuable commodity that makes people do fun things. That's and right. When you spend that commodity in the house, nothing good happens. But when you do it outside, they lose their minds and go, yay! But the minute before you went to the bathroom, kind of boring, you know?
Yeah.
Someone's just standing there holding the leash. And I sometimes call it zombie training. I think like any middle of the night potty breaks and these early ones, you're just sort of standing there, just like, I am taking care of your basic needs. Life is fine. And then as soon as we have success, okay, now in this time, I can do something for you.
I can be reanimated.
Yes. In the middle of the night, I cannot be reanimated.
No.
You will only learn that I can be animated during daylight hours. But and for potty training, I like going out with that whole concept of like, we're just boring. You know, I'm taking care of this. And then as soon as you go, yay, you know.
Right. Although I would also say, too, that I agree with the middle of the night pottying. I am not having a big party afterwards because I don't want the dog to think this is a great thing. I'm going to wake up and go to the bathroom because then I get a whole lot of attention.
Right.
No, if you go to the bathroom, that's great. You can have a cookie. We're going to come in and go back to bed. During the day, yes, there'll be a big party.
Right. There'll be a cookie either way, but
that's
not
right.
Not too much enthusiasm or animation or excitement from me at 2 a.m.
No.
I'll be out there. I'll help you, but no.
That's right. Now, the other thing I think that a point that you made that I thought was really a good idea and something to keep in mind is keeping kennels clean. keeping the dog clean, that if they come from a clean environment, they're more likely to want to maintain that. Dogs don't want to live in their soiling. And so that's why I think it's important to make sure that when you can't supervise the dog and you decide he's going to have some time in his crate or behind a gate, that there's an appropriate place, either if he's behind a gate, for him to go in case you miss, or two, that his crate is really the right size. So he thinks of it as a bedroom and not a bed and bath.
Right.
And so the size of the crate for the dog should be large enough for him to stand, sit, lay down, and turn around. But any bigger than that, and you might be having a bed and a bath problem as opposed to just a bedroom. Why doesn't punishing for house soiling work? Why can't I rub my dog's nose in it and have him learn that that's where he's not supposed to go?
Yeah. Well, gee, let's start with the basic thing of they have to go.
Yes.
They have to. It's a biological imperative that your dog must eliminate. So if the dog is punished for elimination in what you consider to be an inappropriate spot, it is very easy for the dog to learn. You don't like when I go to the bathroom, therefore I should hide. And only go to the bathroom when I'm not being, you know, when I'm alone, when no one sees me, which means behind the couch. It means anywhere that you can kind of get away with it. And that's a really dangerous thing. We want dogs to feel, first off, happy, safe, and comfortable at all times. That would be a really great goal. But also that we understand you have needs. You need to eat, you need to drink, and you do need to eliminate. And it's totally cool, and it makes us happy. Outside, or if you have, you know, an indoor potty area inside. But here's your spot. Here's the spot where you go to the bathroom, and we're totally fine. There's no judgment or bias or upset about that you need to eliminate. So that's the biggest risk with any sort of punishment, is that you're harming your relationship, and you're also possibly teaching your pet that you don't like bodily functions, which puts them in the position of, but I still need to take care of this.
Right, right. And now the other thing I was going to say, too, is that if you catch them after the fact, right, so you haven't been supervising him and he goes to the bathroom in the laundry room and you find it 20 minutes later, scolding him for it is not going to make any difference, because he's not – punishment only works when it's really proximate to a behavior. And not that we want to punish going to the bathroom, but – taking him in there and showing him what he did wrong, he's not going to get the fact that what he did 20 minutes ago is what you're upset about now. So if you find him starting to go to the bathroom, what I do is I'm like, uh-oh, no, 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 and I pick him up and we rush out the door. But if we have a mistake, honestly, clean it up and move on, because punishing him for it is not going to teach him the lesson you think it's going to teach him. It's not going to teach him not to go in the laundry room. It's just going to teach him that for some reason, poop on the floor makes you act like a mad person.
Right. And I think if you have an accident, the first thought is, that's on me. You know, I wasn't watching.
Right.
Something here I need to make a plan to do differently so that doesn't happen again. And the other thing you said was that you pick him up and rush outside. And for young puppies, I love to do that, to pick them up and rush outside. For adult dogs, I don't do that so much. But for puppies, I do, because when you pick them up, they usually stop.
Yes.
Like the whole body kind of clenches and goes, oh. And so you can get outside without the remainder of the puddle squirting down the hallway. So that can be a really handy tip for people that, you know, as you're hustling your dog to the door or pulling a collar or something, you sometimes haven't made it outside. But if your dog is small enough and comfortable with handling and you can just sort of scoop them up and rush outside, then you can usually finish outside. Again, you're sort of standing there very calm, like, okay, we're out here. Go. And they don't go in that first second. People say that all the time, like, oh, he was just starting to pee in the living room and I raced him outside and then I put him down and he didn't go. Like, yeah, because in the 30 seconds in between, whew, all sorts of stuff happened. He got, you know, hustled through the house and he had, whoa, but he needs a moment to go, oh, okay, I'm out here, I'm in the potty spot. Oh, yeah, I did want to go potty. That's right. And then we get there.
You need to give him
take a
chance.
A moment.
Right. You need to give him a chance to unclench.
Right. Yes. So I think really, for house training, it does go very quickly if you're watching very carefully and you're setting your dog up for success, which is, you know, the appropriately sized crate and frequent potty breaks. And so, you know, my rule of thumb for potty breaks is basically all the time, but I describe it as after they've eaten, slept, drunk, or played. So if they've done anything and we're at a transition activity period, like we're playing and then suddenly they stop, potty break. Or they've been napping and suddenly they wake up, potty break. Oh, we had dinner, potty break. Oh, we just went and took a big drink, potty break. So we can just sort of go, oh, at transitions, we add the potty breaks in. Odds are you're going to be, you'll start figuring out your dog's own routine and signals, which is a big part of it. The more you're watching, the more you're figuring out what works for this dog. But secondly, you know, transition times are the times that potty breaks occur.
Yes, that's one of the points I was going to make, too, is that I always tell my owners to look for transitions between activities, sleeping to waking, mm-hmm. waking to, you know, to eating, whatever. Those transitions are when bowels and bladders wake up and mm-hmm. rush them out the door. The other thing is that as you do that, you're going to really begin to recognize the signs that your individual dog is giving you. But right. there are particular ones you can look at. Restlessness is one of them. Mm-hmm. I find if a dog starts really getting restless and I'm looking around and I'm kind of moving and I'm sniffing the floor a lot, to me those are all signals from a puppy that I maybe need to go outside.
And sometimes a little bit of slowing down too. You know, like they're just sort of investigating and then all of a sudden everything slows down and you go, oh, there's a sign.
That's right, because you can't be running around and pooping at the same time. So there's the what yeah. it's sort of this bodily transition between activity and elimination. The body has to slow down.
It's amazing in class when you'll look over at a dog and you go, I think he wants to go outside. And they're like, no, he's fine. I'm like, And then they take the dog out and they go, wow, how'd you know? It's like you're magic. Like, I don't think I'm magic. Might just be that your dog totally looked like he needed to go outside.
That's right. And so I think that that's one of the things that, that also, too, that people just need to pay. That's what supervision is all about, is paying attention and beginning to recognize those signs that he needs to go out. If you can't supervise your dog, I highly recommend that you do not give him free rein of the house.
Right.
One of the things that I think you need to do when you're still in that potty training phase is that when the dog cannot be actively supervised, then you need to put him someplace where he's happy and safe, like in his crate or behind a gate or even tethered to you so that mm-hmm. if he starts moving. So if you're working at your desk and he's tethered to you and he's sleeping on his bed next to you, but then he gets up and starts moving around, you're going to feel that tether move.
Right.
So make sure that he's set up to be successful, so he makes the right decision, and so that he doesn't make the mistakes that you don't want him to make.
Right, and that, I think, is a big problem, that we do give too much freedom too quickly, particularly with adult dogs. You know, an adopted mm-hmm. dog comes into the house, and you're told it's been house-trained. And it probably was in the previous house, but it hasn't lived in your house. So let's not give freedom until it's earned. So.
Right.
You know, bit by bit, you see what is this dog's ability and how much can I have faith that this dog really is house trained or doesn't chew things or doesn't, you know, counter surf. We don't just sort of walk in and go, I'm sure my dog won't have any of these habits. We start very small and say, let's see what you got. And then if you never put your paws on the counter, then I can start assuming that you're not going to counter surf. And if you never wet in this room where I'm in, might be able to have the hall added to your free roam area when I'm just sitting here, but, you know, kind of paying attention, kind of not. But you're certainly not going to have the hall and the living room and, oh, yeah, you can go to the basement too. No. That takes time.
It's kind of like being on probation, you know.
Yeah.
You have to earn those privileges to have more freedom. So you have
to prove
to me. And
I think that's true of people too. I mean, if you just think about, like, what you were allowed to do as a child, our whole lives are built toward ever-increasing freedoms in terms of movement and ability. You know, that your 12-year-old has just as many physical skills for driving a car as your 16-year-old, but you don't let the 12-year-old drive. And when the 16-year-old drives, oh boy, do you have rules. So the rules on your 16-year-old are not the same as what you would say to your spouse. Like, you know, where are you going? When are you going to be back? How long will it be? Well, you're not picking anyone up. You're not driving anyone with you. You know. Freedom is earned. So
right.
House training, I don't know exactly how house training relates to teenagers driving, but it does in my head. So you earn increasing amounts of freedom by demonstrating that you, you know, can behave in the way that's expected.
So that you are being responsible with your eliminations. It's all about responsibility here. If you can be responsible with a car, you can drive one. If you can be responsible with how you eliminate things, mm-hmm. then we're going to give you a little bit more freedom. So I think that it's supervision and then setting the dog up for success by not allowing him to make mistakes that are going to set both of you back.
Right. And so one important piece of that that I think people forget sometimes is to really communicate to the dog that this is great. It's wonderful. So people say, I give him a treat when he comes back in. You know, I let him out in the yard, and then I give him a treat when he comes in. I'm like, that is a fantastic way to teach your dog to come in. Doesn't have anything to do yes. with rewarding your dog for eliminating. So I have no objection to the treat when he comes in. It's just not rewarding what you think it's rewarding. So the reward for elimination in the yard means you're standing there in the rain next to your dog, cold and wet, and then you're rewarding then until your dog gets really good at it. And then you get to stand in the doorway and just go, oh, good, I don't have to do this anymore because that's your habit and you're good. But with puppies, you're out there. And
right.
new dogs. And new dogs, regardless of the age. It's such a common mistake that, you know, so just treat every adult adopted dog as if it were a puppy.
I think that's a really good piece of advice. And the other thing is that as uncomfortable as it may be to be standing out there in the sleet and the snow and the rain, it's not comfortable for your dog either.
Right.
But it will also make sure that house training goes a lot faster so that you're spending a lot fewer days standing in the snow and the sleet and the rain. So it's worth the front-end loading, so to speak, or unloading in the dog's case. But it's worth it to put the effort in at the beginning because it's going to pay off much faster if you do that. And if he starts making mistakes, well, then you need to reassess what it is you might be doing wrong. If house training was going really well and then suddenly we're really backsliding, are you giving him too much freedom? Are you not supervising? Mm-hmm. Are you not rewarding? But there are other reasons why house training can break down.
Yes.
And I think...
But it is important that you started with looking at your own behavior first. So,
yes.
So we're going to talk for a second about some of those other reasons, but those are the ones people jump to first. I think the first thing we should look at if house training breaks down is, has something changed in the environment? Like, am I changing the food? Am I changing the schedule? Am I changing the supervision? Am I doing something different?
Right.
And then, if all of that is good, then we start looking at, oh, does the dog have a UTI? You
right.
know, are they not feeling well? Is there some sort of illness? But I think sometimes people go, you know, they look at dog reasons before they look at people reasons.
I agree. The other thing I get, too, is that they'll have a dog and he's been housebroken for a while. And it could be that the dog is, you know, two or three. It's been housebroken for 2 or 3 years. And then suddenly he starts having accidents in the house. And they say to me, I think he's doing it to spite me.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, well, okay, I'm not thinking that, but, you know, well, let's take a look at a few things. One of the things I always have him do is take him to the vet and get a good physical done and make sure that there's not a urinary tract infection, because I have found repeatedly that that is usually the case for older dogs. And
so common.
And then they'll say, but he sleeps through the night. And I'm like, I sleep through the night when I have a UTI. So that's more having to do with circadian rhythms than whether or not you have a bladder infection. So he can still sleep through the night and have a UTI. So have that checked out, because who wants to jump through a whole bunch of behavioral loops if an antibiotic is going to solve the problem? But there are other things that can cause house training to break down. Stress is one of them.
Yes. It's a big one.
Is your dog under stress? Are you moving? Have you had somebody join the household? Do you have a new roommate, a new husband, a new child?
You know, or someone leave the household.
That's right.
It can be stressful in either direction. Or somebody's sick. Or a new job schedule. I mean, lots of times it's just the break in routine that causes stress.
Right.
And urination is a stress-relieving behavior. So for a lot of dogs, they feel a little bit better if they just pee on something. And that's unfortunate. It's not about anger. It's about stress reduction. But it may be because you're working longer hours, your dog is having accidents in the house because he's stressed. But it's not because he's angry or he's spiteful or he's you know, frustrated.
He may just have a very full bladder.
Yeah.
If you're working longer hours so that he's used to going, say, 5 hours without going to the bathroom, and now he has to wait 7, it could be that he simply cannot hold it. It could be that something else. It could be you added a new pet. Maybe, you've added a puppy, and the puppy is now urinating in the inappropriate spaces, and so the dog, there's a new smell of urine inside, and the old dog's going, cool, I can mark here, too.
Yeah, and you think you cleaned it up well, but you did not clean it up well enough for a dog's nose to not know that there was urine there. And that's a real tricky one, because the scent of urine is a trigger for urination. So a dog will smell where another dog went in the house, and then suddenly you have this, you know, repeated marking of this, or same dog or another dog scent. It doesn't even have to be a different dog. But they'll repeatedly mark this spot. You're like, what is up with that? I keep cleaning it. Yep. Not to dog level yet.
Right. And if it does have, one of the things is when you get, for example, we're getting a brand new burner puppy in February. And one of the first.
Oh, it's official?
It's official. We did. We even put a deposit down on him.
Wow.
So we're very excited. Now we're going through the whole process of what do we name the dog. So I said, Brad, you know, there's this podcast I recently listened. So, but one of the things that we will do is, as I have a lot of floor rugs, I live in an old house, is all the rugs will be picked up. All the rugs will be rolled up for about a month or so until we're sure that this new member of our family is house trained. And so that way I don't have to worry about getting those rugs properly cleaned, because one of the things that would happen is that the urine soaks into the pad or into the carpet, you need something that's going to break down the enzymes. And sometimes it just doesn't work very well, or you have to have them professionally cleaned. So one of the things, my suggestions is when you've got a new dog, as much as you can, pick up rugs so that they don't become objects for urination. But I, you know, and that's going to be the time when all the rugs are going to be sent out to be cleaned.
Yes.
So, you know, and then they'll just stay rolled up until everybody's housebroken. But if you can, try to make sure that you've got surfaces that are easily cleanable and that you can use an enzyme dissolving, protein dissolving cleaner.
Right. And the other thing to keep in mind is, you know, like we all have days when we need to go out more or unexpectedly. Yes. And somehow dogs don't seem to have as many of those days as most people do. But I had a day recently. This might be in the TMI category. But I had been gone all day, and I had gone to the bathroom a few times while I was out. But I'm driving home thinking, I really need to go potty. And I get home, and my dog is there, and I always rush him out first. And I was like, oh, boy, that's not fair, but I'm taking the turn first. And so I thought, this poor dog has waited all day, and he was totally fine. But what is that? You know, how many times do you get to go to the bathroom during a day, and how many times does your dog get to go to the bathroom during the day? And it's not always the same number. It's not always predictable. There are these moments when you just go, wow, I think I really do need to go. Yeah. And that happens to our dogs too.
Yeah, that happened to Zuzu the other week. Zuzu is completely house trained, and she was doing just fine. And I didn't realize she had been, I guess it had been as long as it had been between potty breaks, and she was telling me she needed to go out, and I was paying no attention to her. You know, I was doing something else, and I look over, and the poor thing is urinating on my dining room rug, because she really, really had to go, and I thought I was telling you, and so I rushed her outside to go to the potty, cleaned up the rug. We haven't had an accident since, but I don't blame her. I blamed me for not paying close enough attention to when she'd been out last and when she needed to go this time.
Right.
Now, we're talking about urination, but this can also go with defecation. And I had a client just this week who was having a worker come to the house, and the worker texted and said, please put all your animals up. So she said, well, he's not coming back again. we'll have to find somebody else to, you know, fix the furnace or whatever. But he was coming, and so her husband suggested, instead of crating their dog in their crate downstairs, why didn't she go upstairs to the bedroom with the dog and close the door, and then she could be with the dog. So she's up there, and she was going to do some ironing, and she closed the door to the bedroom because the dog usually has a full run of the house. And the stress of closing the door, being in a room with the door closed, she pooped. Right there. And she was, because she knew that there was somebody downstairs that she couldn't go meet, and now their door is closed, and even though mom's here, this is just totally unfair. And the owner was just so surprised, and I said, well, I think there's a couple of things that you can do to prevent this from happening again, one is she loves her crate. So have a crate upstairs that you put her in. She's less likely to poop in her crate. Mm-hmm. Two, before you close the door, give her something to do that she loves, like an elk antler or a stuffed Kong or one of her intelligence toys. She has an IQ ball that she just loves. So she's busy doing something when you close the door. Or the other thing you could do is put a gate across the door rather than closing the door so she still has that visual. Or a gate at the top of the stairs so she can run around upstairs. So I think there are things you can do to manage your dog, but also understand that there can be unexpected stresses, and spontaneous elimination is a response to stress.
Yes. That actually happened when you were saying that. It reminded me. Years ago, I'm trying to remember which dog it was. I think it must have been Midas. But before I had kids, pretty much everywhere I went, dog went too. So I went over to my mom's house one day, and the dog went with me. And there were a bunch of, like, distant relatives there. So I'm, like, meeting people that I don't really know. And I'm like, okay, hello, hello, hello. Probably 10 people at my mom's house. And then I hear someone say to my mother, "Oh, your daughter's dog." My dog had just pooped in the living room. My dog had never pooped in any house before or after. But that one day, with all of these relatives, you know, second cousins once removed, kind of being like, "Oh, your daughter's dog." It was just awful. And so, you know, clean that up, get the dog out. But I don't know what that was. But life happens. You know, that was not a punishable offense. That was a stressful moment where things went poorly. I mean, fortunately for me, my dog was still invited back to my mother's house after that. Because my mom knew too that was an aberration. That was not, that was not a house training issue. That was just something bad happened. So, you know, we've all had a situation where, you know, stomach upset or you throw up or you know, something happens and you go, wow, that was unplanned. So that happens to dogs too.
Yes. And they can do not only spontaneous defecation, there can be spontaneous urination or spontaneous releasing of your anal gland, which is always fun.
Always a treat.
Always a treat. I always look forward to that one. But I was going to say that it's not just dogs, it's people too. Do you remember in the movie Saving Private Ryan? In the opening scene, the men are in the boats as they're traveling over to Normandy, and they realize as they're approaching this battle front how dangerous and scary this is. And they show these men in these boats urinating on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we do that too under severe stress. And who can decide exactly what severe stress is for someone?
Right.
You know, this little golden is just a sweetheart. I love her to death, but she is very sensitive. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when something like that happens, it's just not the normal course of things. And I'm supposed to meet people. This is very stressful for me. And for Midas, it's like, who are these people at grandma's house? This is not right.
Just go over here in the living room for a minute.
That's
right. So house training is not rocket science, but it does require really careful attention and consistency and a real focus on rewarding the behavior you do want, which is, you know, just our perpetual theme. What do you want? I want my dog to go outside and eliminate out there. So great. We're going to pay for that. We're going to make that the really reinforceable behavior we're working toward, and setting yourself up for success so that your dog isn't, you know, given too much freedom and making a choice that you don't like, that then you have to decide, is that the dog's fault or your fault? Because that choice occurred and you're now dealing with the after effects of it. So, I mean, that's kind of house training in a nutshell.
That's right.
I do like the House Training for Dummies book by Susan McCullough. I think she does a pretty good job of kind of covering all the bases and all of the different techniques. It can be a little overwhelming when you go, wow, do I really need to read hundreds of pages to house train a dog? But it's a great resource for when you're stuck or you're having a problem, because there isn't a one-size-fits-all answer for when you're having a problem. Because
correct.
Why is this problem occurring requires a little thinking sometimes.
Right. And the other thing I would mention, too, that in addition to remembering to reward desirable behavior, then you ignore or redirect undesirable behavior. Mm-hmm. If your dog has had an accident, clean it up and move on. And if you catch your puppy in the process, redirect by picking him up and taking him on outside. So these are all things that are going to, you know, aid in correct house training, and also to work to build a relationship with your dog rather then deteriorate it by punishing him for something he has no control over at times.
Right. And one side note on this house training thing while we're talking about it, occurs to me that the story I told is about my dog having a problem at my mother's house, a place which she had been to regularly. But whenever you take your dog to another environment, increase your supervision and watch for your signals, because their schedule might be different just in terms of when they feel the need to eliminate, but also just everything about the environment and all of that. Don't just sort of say, my dog is house trained at home, so therefore my dog is house trained everywhere. Increase your support whenever you go somewhere else with your dog, particularly the first time, but always just be a little bit more conscious of that.
Well, because as we mentioned, I don't know how many times, behavior deteriorates under stress.
That's my favorite thing.
And, you know, even instinctive behaviors can deteriorate under stress. Right. You can have that spontaneous urination or defecation or anal expression. So watch your dog and don't give him free rein in the house. Keep him tethered right. And right with you. So, yep. All right. Well, I think that does it for us on house training. I think we can put a link to McAuliffe's book. Mm-hmm. On our website and show notes, and I have a house training 101 handout that we can also put up on the show notes. And if you do have continued problems with house training, my recommendation would be, one, talk to your vet so that you eliminate any kind of physical problem that mm-hmm. your dog may be having. And then the second thing is if there is no physical problem and you continue to have problems and you can't seem to resolve it, once again, find yourself a positive reinforcement trainer who can give you some tips on how to handle this.
Yes.
All right, then. Well, Colleen, I will see you next week. And thanks again for a stimulating conversation about dogs.
Amazing where we go.
It is amazing. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.